Today on the AV Podcast, I welcome friend of the podcast, Headley, as well as first-time guest, Etobicoke Thunder AAU coach, Randall Walter, as we discuss the state of the Toronto Raptors, what moves they can potentially make to take advantage of the window for more success, the perception of the team and the city, plus more. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and to continue to listen to more podcast shows and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. It's the AV Podcast with Kyle C. on South Shore AV Radio. South Shore, stand up!
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Kyle C. on South Shore AV Radio.
Alright, welcome once again to the second half of the AV, where we'll be talking about Raptors moves from a fan's perspective. First off, I'd like to welcome back Headley, a friend of the podcast and past South Shore AV contributor to the show. What up?
What's good, man? What's good?
And my other guest is the head coach of the Etobicoke Thunder AAU program and director of player development, as well as the U12 Under-12 Talent Identification head coach for Ontario Basketball. He's also the co-founder of Canada Impact Sports Group. If that's not enough, he was raised in an Antiguan household. Therefore, he loves putting a little English herb in his OJ when he's eating eggplant and saltfish for breakfast. And I guarantee, I guarantee you right now, no matter the weather, you can hear him blasting Ricardo Drew from his car with the windows down. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, representing Team Lightskin, please welcome Randall Walter to the AV. Welcome,
sir. Now, you got to have some, hands clapping and all that for me, right?
Yeah.
Yo, what an intro. I play fantasy football or fantasy basketball. What the hell was that intro I got? Randall comes back with, the award ceremony, lifetime achievement award.
What are you talking about? I gave you a legitimate intro. I called you All-American and All-Canadian the first time I had you on the show.
Oh, that's the first time introduction time. Okay.
Carry on. Heavy, next time I'm going to write something else just to keep up, man.
Nah. We good here.
You missed the captain of the light skin, crew. Man. Shout out to Sean Adonis.
or AKA, get off my lawn, Sean.
And he'll be nodding in approval while listening to this, I'm sure.
Yes, sir.
Yes, so I brought you guys here for sure to talk about the Raptors in terms of their potential, in terms of the championship window that they have a chance to enter. So as of this taping, they are 28-13. They're two games behind Cleveland for the number one spot, with Boston about a game and a half behind them. But it looks like they're probably going to beat Brooklyn tonight, right, at this stage?
Yeah, so, they're going to move on to win past Brooklyn, and that was kind of a gimme.
Yeah.
I hope so. Jeez.
Yeah, so even though they're doing really well and they're looking like a strong contender to go to the Eastern Conference Finals back-to-back years, mm-hmm. and even with Boston nipping at his heels, at the end of the day, you play to win championships. That's the ultimate goal. And mm-hmm. from the first time in this team's history, the team is playing and working behind the scenes to legitimately make that scenario come true. The time for them is to win is right now. The window for them to go for it is right now. And, having the two of you here to discuss some of the potential moves and what needs to be done to get there, it's a reflection of the conversations we've had recently. Shout out to S10. I want to get you guys on here, of course, to share our ideas with y'all. So, the rumors of Paul Millsap coming here has been more or less prevalent since last summer. But if that deal was to go through, what do you guys think? Do you guys think getting him pushes the Raptors over to the top to possibly compete or strongly compete with Cleveland? And if so, do they have to go after a fourth star to make this work? So, Randall, I'll start with you first.
Well, I think Headley and I have spoken this in length. And to get Paul Millsap, I think and Henry, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're both on the same page. He'll definitely help get the Raps to the Eastern Conference Finals a lot easier. I think the way this roster is constructed right now, I really don't think it's like a clear path for them to consistently go to that conference final. But Millsap will definitely help them, but I don't think he puts them over the edge by no means.
You're completely right, Randall, on that. I'm with you. Millsap is a nice piece. The Raptors dearly is missing a four. He would definitely give us some of that offensive power in the front court that we're missing. Mm-hmm. But giving us over the hump to Cleveland? Nah. Getting us to the conference final easier? Absolutely. Cause, I mean, don't forget, yeah, we made it there the last 2 years, but it wasn't easy. I mean, we could have easily been out in the first round how things were going in the playoffs, and a lot of teams got better. So to your part B of that question, and I'll just jump to that, do we need to get a fourth guy? Yeah. I believe if you bring Millsap, people act like I think this guy's my cousin or something like that.
He's not?
Talk about cousins. I'll go after DeMarcus Cousins if we had a Millsap, because I think bringing a piece like that, even though he's obviously, we know he's a very controversial player, locker room character, it may not be the best, but in terms of if you want to put your chips all in, where you have Millsap and you can get Cousins, obviously at a discount, because you know you never get true value for a guy who, in my opinion, is probably the best pick in the league right now, but. If the Raptors were set up that way, and I think getting a piece like that would put them in the finals personally.
Talent-wise, on paper, yes, I would agree. Cousins is probably the best big man in the NBA. But, you know, it's much more than just about, you know, talent on paper, right? So I think if you bring Cousins here, no matter who it is, he's a threat to not only just blow up the locker room, he's a threat to blow up the ACC, to wipe apart the condos on Lakeshore, get a piece of Etobicoke, you know. He might be nuclear in Markham. Like, basically, he's basically tearing up the city of Toronto at this point, because that's the thing with the Raptors. Like, they've built such a – they basically brought in like a certain culture here, you know what I mean, that's part of their success. I think somebody like a Millsap, I think, fits in perfectly with that. But – when you bring in somebody like a Cousins, I mean, you're really rolling the dice. I think you got to have – it's kind of like when Rashid went to Detroit. Like, Rashid works in Detroit because Rashid was a great team player by all accounts. And as much as he was volatile on the court, you know, his personality in the locker room was – you know, he was one of the leaders. Now, unless Cousins turns into something like that, I think it's going to be tough. I think you have to have a certain amount of veterans in the locker room that's able to reel him in, including the coaching staff. I'm not sure if you have that here.
But I think at the same time, you have to remember, from all accounts, it sounds like DeMar, and to a certain extent, Larry, they're fairly close with Cousins. Right? And I think it's all kind of part and parcel where you get these guys together and you get three guys that are on Team USA that jive. It's, like you said, we all alluded to culture. And if you get someone into a certain culture, it's just kind of, you know, even though they bring that different element, like he's an edgy player, but you bring him into a locker room where guys are kind of, they're all kind of driven to win, and they're all driven to go to that one destination. I think Cousins in the East, by far, would be just a game changer. I think I would even go as far to say Cousins, without Millsaps, potentially can put them over
Cleveland,
potentially. But we're going to go back to this whole pie in the sky thing, because what could the Raptors realistically give up to Sacramento to get Cousins? Because Cousins is a game changer. It's like there's only few of those guys out there that you got to give up the farm. And would you guys give up the farm just to get Cousins?
Well, that's what I was going to say, that unless we can get him at a discount, because how I see it with Cousins, and then truth be told, we'll entertain this a little longer, but I really don't think that he's really on the table right now. It looks like Sacramento is committed to it, or at least that's what the rumors are. But if we had to, say it was in the picture, to lose what Toronto's saying, because of his character, you can't get, like, you're not going to get like value for him. And the thing is, if they try to pull, because he has a year and a half left in his contract. So if they try to pull this off at the trade deadline next year, they're going to have even less kind of like fighting power, because basically his contract's up in 4 months, and then, you know, people are going to be like, you know what, same thing with Millsap. We're not going to give you the farm for a guy who potentially can leave at the end of the year. What I thought, if we got Millsap, and obviously in my trade scenario, even though it sounds like Millsap's off the table, I wanted us to rid Carroll in that deal. So in the deal for Cousins, obviously Big Val will be in it, and I'm willing to give up our 27 our two picks that we have in 2017, and some fillers to get him. I mean, would that be enough for our Cousins? You know, like three picks and a filler with Big Val?
I don't think so.
It's probably as strong as an offer that anyone would give a guy like Cousins because of his antics off the court.
Right. Now, I'm just going to get into this, just a little insider information that I got. Over the summer, in the off season, the Raps were, you know, they were looking to bargain, and we heard about the Millsap that came out a little later. I kind of heard rumors about it. I didn't think it was kind of.
Yo, did you ever find out what we offered in the summer?
No, again, it was from what I heard, it was rumors. I heard it was supposed to be the first pick that we had. First pick. I'm trying to remember
Jake,
now.
Was it Paul Powell?
No, it was the first pick, Ross and T-Pat.
But the scary thing is the scenario that you proposed, Headley, in terms of giving up both the 2017 first round picks. I still don't think that's enough, because as the Raptors are playing right now, those two picks are going to be they're going to be out of the lottery. And in this draft, unless you're getting, if you're in a Boston situation where you're getting Brooklyn's pick, like that's if you want to offer that, now we can talk. But if you're offering picks that most likely might end up in the 20s, I don't know if you really do that. And then on top of that, then you're getting back somebody like Val, who's, you know, like 50 cents in the dollar compared to Cousins. And then if you're throwing in like Powell or Patterson or Ross or one of those three, or sorry, two of those three even, I don't think that equates to something like a Cousins. It's a tricky situation because he's such a great talent, but he's so volatile. Like, and I agree with you, Randall. If you bring him here, I think it's they immediately jump on the level of a Cleveland, at least in the East. You know what I mean? But it's just, the scary thing is, if you cannot corral him in the locker room, your whole franchise is blowing up. It could be something where he signs here for the next 10 years, everything is beautiful, or, you know, by next year he's playing for another team and your roster is completely decimated and you're starting back from the bottom again.
Well, that's why, differently than Randall, I don't think I would bring Cousin as a four. If we got another veteran leader, I'll bring Cousins in. I don't necessarily think I'll bring him in as a third, third leg of a chair, just because of that character. You may need more than just a Lowry and a DeRozan to kind of corral him in, right? And again, a lot of times it's very rare do you get like value when you get a superstar, when you do these type of deals.
Right.
And the only reason why I'm thinking that could be a winning chip, just because there's a lot of teams that are scared or unwilling to make that kind of risk and deal for Cousins because of that. So I'm just saying, just based, if this is a situation where Sacramento is like, you know what, we know Cousins is not going to re-sign with us, we got to get rid of him and get something, because of that push, where, you know, they might feel like they're up against the wall if they don't do something now and lose him for nothing type thing, how Atlanta did with Horford, they might take something at 80 cents on the dollar because it's the best trade value, their trade option that's out there. Yeah. But again, you know what? I don't know. I think this is all fool's gold, because it doesn't look like Sacramento is willing to pull the trigger. It looks like it's going to be remaining there anyways.
Plus, Sacramento can offer him the most amount of money. And at this point in the game, I think that Cousins knows that they're going to build around him, because he's that turning point and he's that franchise piece. But just to move on, because I'm just going to bust everyone's bubble. We all know that, A, Millsap's not coming to Toronto, and B, we know that for sure Boogie ain't coming down here. So the issue at hand, C, is realistically it's one or two things that we can continue to discuss. One is, by trade deadline, will the Raps make a move? And the other thing is, will they wait till the offseason to do something? And I can tell you right now, from all indications and talking to people and insiders, after that whole Quaver deal, it looked like it was open game. And Raps were licking their chops. And from what I hear, Masai was on the phone and working out some deals. And I think that it's kind of one of those things similar to when Gay left the Raps, and that cohesiveness kind of, you know, even though they lost a big piece, the sum of all the parts kind of lifted the Raps up and they started winning. Mm-hmm. I see that kind of happening right now with ATL, where their back's against the wall. It's kind of like a band of brothers, and they're playing some good ball right now. Mm-hmm. I think Atlanta right now is saying, you know what, we see the value in Paul Millsap, and we see that he is a perennial all-star, and it's hard to get those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, either you start from the ground up, or you know what I mean, you just ride with what you got. And I think that's what they're going to do. And I don't see, Masai said it already. He goes, you know, he said it more than one time. He goes, you know, he's not forcing anything just to force it. You know, between now and trade deadline, he knows where they're at. He knows that they're that one piece short. He's not stupid.
Yeah.
But at the same token, he's not going to give away the farm just to try to get past Cleveland. And you have to also remember, it's a tough situation for him. You got a team right now that's playing the best ball in franchise history. Right now, they have Pace have the best record ever.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Headley and I talk about this all the time. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree. As many, trade machine, you know, ESPN trade machine scenarios Headley can come up with, I'm going to tell you right now, when we play fantasy basketball, and many others can attest to this, how hard is it for you to trade some of your good pieces in fantasy basketball? Imagine doing it in an NBA war room.
In real life.
Right? So I don't foresee the Raps doing anything major come trade deadline, if anything. The only piece I can potentially see them maybe going after, and like this is at a real discounted price because he's going to be a free agent in the summer, is Noel from Philly. And how much does he help us? I don't know.
Yeah,
but at least he can kind of play that four, the five, and he can mix in the lineup. He doesn't need much touches and has a defensive presence.
Now, I agree in the sense, too, with, you know, not making a move just to make a splash. So I'll ask you guys this question, too. Like, how important is continuity to a franchise? Because for me, I think that's the Raptors' biggest asset, just the fact that the core has been together for the last 3 to 4 years. They've been through the highs, the lows. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses. You know, they played into the same schemes routinely for so long together. And even if we don't, or I should say, even if people don't like the way that they play or that, you know, the offensive could be better, their best players have improved, you know, in that style each season. And players, which is the most important thing, they believe it and they've bought in. So just in the fact that they know who they are and how they're defined. So my point is just basically, with all the movement in the league that's been happening the last few years, their success comes from the fact that they've been together and they've stayed and they've grown together in the right way, and they're finding supporting players just to match that style. Now, like I said before, like Millsap, I think, would have fit perfectly into that style because of just of how they play. They like their fours to be able to stretch it out. You know, I think that's kind of why they picked up Jared Sellinger, you know, this past summer, but he's yet to play. So, you know, we haven't even seen what he can bring to the table yet. You know, hopefully he's, you know, like he's recovering quickly and hopefully he's in shape. But, you know, we have to see what he can bring too. I'm not saying that's going to put it over the top, but he's a player that can possibly fit in just in terms of their style of play. So I think just making a splash move and I'm going to touch on the Lowry thing again. I always bring it up every time I talk about the Raptors, and I'll ask you guys that about them just a little bit. But, like, to me, I'm like, I think the continuity is so important for what they do. And I think that's why they're really succeeding.
Yo, let me touch on a couple of things that you mentioned. One, I'll do the easy part first. We mentioned about Sully. I feel right now where the four is our biggest hole. But when you look at players who are potentially that's on the take out Millsap, because obviously Millsap, I don't think, is on the block anymore. But you got, like, who's been on the block for years. You got Fareed. You hear names like Derek Favors, who hasn't really been the same since he came back from injury. These are, like, second-tier kind of fours that are out there. These are not, you know, the all-stars, but solid starters, so to speak. I feel, in some ways, like Ram was saying, like sometimes the best move for Toronto is a no move, because we really don't know what Philly can bring to us at the four, because he's really that kind of that tier type level player that we got, but obviously he's lost in the mix because he hasn't played yet. And you know, all in the cage at the beginning of the season looked like this guy looked like he was on the Jenny Craig diet. Like he looked like he had slimmed down. He was playing some good ball. So we may have that four that's in a roster right now that could uplift this team once he gets back on the floor. They said he's supposed to come back sometime in January. They still haven't put down a defined date on it. So it'll be interesting how he plays once he gets on the floor.
Mm-hmm. I heard he's going to the D League right now.
Well, that's good.
He's been in the D League now, so he's finally getting some reps.
I heard he's about to go to D-League. He's cleared now for practice, and he's about to go.
No, that's good.
Okay,
that's good.
Let's see how that goes. The only thing that sucks with him only signing a 1-year contract, it could be the whole thing like Biz again, where we don't got his bird rights. So he can ball out, and then we're in a situation where now we have to bring back Lowry at a max contract. Will there be enough money for him? But I mean, I guess that's a problem. That would be a good problem to have, meaning he would have played his part and played it well, so yeah, that's to be determined. The other question you were saying, Calvin, about continuity, and I'll go even further than that. With the Toronto Raptors as a franchise, where it's not owned by an individual, but owned by a corporation with MLSC, they look at this as a business. The business of the Raptors is making money like they've never made money before. Going to the conference finals 2 years in a row makes them big money. You know what I mean? So I don't even know in our Raptors fans come out in the drones come playoff time. Like it's almost like a college atmosphere frenzy. I remember last year during the playoffs, other than Golden State Warriors, which is basically in the Valley, if you talk, I mean it's San Francisco, Oakland,
the Bay Area,
where the money's so high. We had the second highest ticket sale. So I'm like, I don't even know if the Raptors, if they're going to make a move where it's going to disturb their core, he doesn't even have that pressure.
No.
Like, it's almost like corporate-wise, money-wise, they're fine where they are, and I don't even know if, unless something falls on their lap, do they really want to take a swing where you can potentially be Cleveland or you can fall back. I don't even think Masai has that kind of pressure, to tell you the truth.
He doesn't have that pressure, and that's why I said there's no rush for him to make a move now. Now, we're talking about where our hole is. Our hole is clear. Everyone's talking about it. It's up to four. Now, this summer, Headley, is the summer of the four, right? You like, think about all the free agents that are popping up. I mean, just off the top of my head, I mean, I know it's a stretch, but you got Blake Griffin. You got Paul Millsap. You just talked about Noel. You got I heard that this is the guy that Masai wants to go after hard in the summer. It's Ibaka, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, then you got Meritage. You got little guys like lesser known guys. I'm not lesser known, lesser talented guys like Monroe, Plumlee, Taj Gibson. You know, you can even entertain re-signing Pat. P-Pat. You got Zach Randolph. There's options.
Yeah.
So Sully can take his fat ass and go somewhere else.
And then
we have the money. I think that was your next question you're talking about, right? With Lowry, Calvin.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So just in the spirit of continuity, I like I said, I've always asked this like in previous podcasts before. Do you re-sign Kyle Lowry? And when I say that, remember, when you re-sign Kyle Lowry, you're most likely re-signing him to the max, which is $200 million.
Yeah,
and he's going to be 32 years old.
You have to, guys.
Well, you'll be 31 when the season ends, but yeah.
You have to. You have to re-sign him. There's not an option right now.
It is
what it is. You cannot re-sign. You can't say, oh, no, we can. What better point guard are you going to find at this moment right now in time? You're not.
Right?
So the only option is sign.
But play devil's advocate, because you're right. I mean, he's definitely played his ass off since coming from Houston to here. Devil's advocate, we signed him. We're basically, we without making a move where a guy is in our roster with bird rights, we probably don't have the money to get any of those guys that you're talking about. And then we're looking at kind of somebody in between.
No, not necessarily. Kind of like not necessarily, because MLSC said they would go over the cap.
But you said MLSC, that's what I'm saying. If this was an owner, okay, unless you got that.
They got the okay to do it. They got the okay to
do it.
They got the okay to do it. The problem is it worth it? So that's what I'm saying. Like, if Masai could swindle a deal to get, let's just say, I'm throwing in Blake Griffin, they would do it. Now, as well, you're going to be losing a couple other pieces. You might trade a couple pieces to open up some salary to get some more players. Masai's a smart, shrewd guy, man. He'll make a move. But what it comes down to at the end of the day, fellas, and Calvin, you said this at the beginning of the podcast. You said, are the Raps or will the Raps ever be a true contender? And Headley, you said something, I can hug you right now. You said MLSE is that their vision. So they can go over it. We could talk all these trade scenarios, but I'm going to give you a scenario. And I was talking about this with someone else the other day. I'm going to bring it down to back in the days when we used to go out clubbing and stuff, right? So we're talking about bagging some girls, and you see two hot broads in the club, right? So me and Headley see two hot broads, and I say, man, I see them before Headley. I go holler at them, right? And I'm talking them up because I'm trying to feel out there's one hotter than the other. They're both not hot, but I want the one that's just a little hotter, right? And I'm hollering at her, but the one that's not as hot is feeling me and going hard at me. And I'm like, damn, whatever. I'll just get whatever I can get, right? So I end up getting her. Then Headley slides in and gets the hotter one. And I'm pissed now because now I'm stuck with the minus one. And actually, things are going well with the minus one, but I keep seeing Headley flossing with the dimer chick. I'm never going to get that dimer chick anymore, right? I'm stuck with the minus one. I'm number two, and that's what it is. I'm never going to get that chick. I'm never going to get to that level because I'm there. I'm stuck. And that's what the Raptors are. They're always going to be the minus one. They're never going to be that dime chick.
They're going to be the nine.
They're going to be the nine, not the ten. And you're just going to have to be satisfied with the nine. There's nothing wrong being the nine, but that's what we are. Because even though no one wants to talk about it, when it gets down to the get down, there is still not as much as back in the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s, the stigma playing in Toronto. But there still is that kind of luxury factor, right?
Right.
Back in the days, it was like a bottom kind of idea. I don't want to go to T-Dot. But now people are like, hey, I don't mind going to the 6, right?
Right.
So it's like, but it's still not an ideal destination. And I don't care what nobody says. I know because I've talked to players and they're like, yo, I love going to the 6. I love hollering out the girls. But, man, it's cold up there, taxes, and blah, excuse.
And I think that's basically why I think you have to do things like, as you said, like, I think you have to sign Lowry back. And I've always preached this because to me, I'm like, what's the alternative if you let him go, if you let him walk, right? Now, you're basically losing an all-NBA player for... Like, even if there's a scenario where you get, like, a high draft pick from, even if it's in this year's draft. So even if you trade and you get a stud point guard or a shooting guard, like, say you get, like, a Dennis Smith Jr. or a Malik Monk or a De'Aaron Fox, like, you still might be waiting another 2-3 years before that player is really ready, you know, to make an impact that can lift your team back to a championship level, even in the guards league. So to me, I'm like you. I don't think you can afford to take a step back. Like, I think when that whole thing with Rudy Gay, when he got traded and they were about to dismantle the team, you know, I think that was the time to blow it up. And I was all for it. Like, I was all for blowing that team up at that point. But then Lowry changed, you know, like for all intents and purposes, he wasn't the easiest player to deal with. He did basically a 180. You know, DeRozan got better. The core got stronger. But Lowry, I think, was a linchpin. He's like the heart and soul of what they do. Like, he's part of the reason why you're having the biggest success in this franchise's history. So I think if you want to break that stigma, and I'm not saying it'll ever be broken about coming to Toronto, but if you are, you have to make moves like signing back guys like Lowry, because I mean, as if I'm a player and I'm looking at the situation of Toronto, you know what, their organization has changed up, it's stronger now, you know, Masai's there, you know, they got money to spend, they're willing to spend money, they're at a certain level. But if you're looking at it from the perspective, well, they don't even want to sign back Lowry. Isn't Lowry their guy? Lowry's an all NBA player. He's probably going to be an all NBA player again this year. Like, so you won't sign that guy back, and you expect me to come over there with the taxes and the cold and everything else? Nah, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere else. You know, so but I think it's a better chance once they see that the success is continuing. You know, the Raptors are at a point where they can continually stack successes on top of each other. So if they're at this point now, I'm like, I think you will get more players to say, you know what, they might got something, they might have something there. Let's take a shot. You know, maybe I will sign there. You know, but I don't think you shake that. I think if you basically let Lowry go, you're basically not only taking a step back at the team, but the perception is you guys aren't ready. You know, and you're going back to the
bottom. The team goes with how Lowry and DeRozan play, and the thing about it is, they're ball dominant players.
I know.
So you bring someone like a Cousins in, that cuts back on Lowry's game. Their whole success is they don't have an offense. It's two guys gunning. It's a backcourt that just goes past it to each other and guns, and they're efficient at doing it. And that's just their game plan, right?
Right.
And that's why Rudy didn't fit in the mix. Rudy is a very similar type player, not as efficient, right? But you got three guys like that. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes you may not need that player that you think we need.
Yeah,
right?
I agree with that.
And that was the success over in Detroit, right?
So a few points I want to make. One, your analogy with the club Randall, that was dope because I want to make sure if Calvin remembers that time where he forgot about club etiquette. I brought this guy over to play wingman because I saw these two bunnies. Then this nigga goes and takes the right bunny before I even have a chance to make an option on which one I want. As a proper wing, Calvin, you lose stripes for that. And I'll never let you forget
that. I cannot believe you're throwing that story in my face. And that's not how it went down.
I'll never let you forget that. That is not how the story went down. The Calvin,
it's a hilarious story.
Club etiquette. Hashtag that. You need to remember that. Two. Real quick. This was a point I was gonna make, but since you brought the whole thing with the guards being ball heavy, I'm saying Cousins, but at the same time I'm not saying Cousins because we know he's not there. But I think part of the problem is when we have a guy like Big Val, who to me is a puss because he. You need to have a front guy who is more demanding. Yeah, these guys will take 20 shots a game, but at the same time, if you have a proper piece who is going to demand for the ball and not fall back as much as what we have in our forefront, I find part of the problem with Val is he's regressed because of how the offense, as you said, no offense that we have. Blame that on the coach, blame that on the player as well, too. But I think if you get somebody that's a little bit more aggressive, that'd be like, hey, give me my points down here, not to necessarily disrupt the flow, but also you need somebody that's a little bit more, I guess, more confident in themselves, and I just don't see that with Al right now. But the two other main points I was going to make was one, and not to knock Messiah, right? Because, I mean, Executive of the Year, what he's been able to bring to this franchise is like what we had no other before. But a lot of the moves he made when Cal was talking about, you know, I mean, we traded away Gay, and we were really at that point we're thinking about blowing up the team. And then, as you said, Randall, sometimes the sum of the parts makes the whole, like, we almost had like a rally cry, and this team did better than we ever expected. And then you can talk about the move where he finally got rid of Bargnani, which was great because we all figured the mere fact that he got a pick out of that was unbelievable.
Right.
And then he signed Carroll to max money. All of us basically thought that was too much, but a lot of the moves that Messiah has made bringing in Biz, we brought Biz for nothing. That worked out. It seems like I'm not knocking what he's done, but a lot of I haven't seen anything where I was like, oh man, he really put himself out there in terms of a move.
He doesn't do that though. That's not his.
Yeah, exactly. That's not for or against him. But a lot of the stuff he's doing is with BC Parts, with Brian Calderon's Parts. So in that regard, at least my estimation, it's still open in terms of like where the Raptors can go underneath him in terms of his moves and stuff. And let me ask you this: you know, we're talking about all these bigs that's coming in 2014. Do any of you guys think the collaboration with Drake? Do you think that helps us? Because as you said, Randall, and I agree with you. I don't think we have because I remember back in the day, I was like, yo, if trading to get salary cap or salary cap space to sign people was a dumb move in my opinion, even back 5 years ago, because I was like, nobody's coming here. So unless you're trying to trade to bring contracts here, trying to trade to bring in salary cap relief was a dumb move, because nobody wanted to come to Toronto. Then Toronto started winning. We got all NBA teams. We got the All-Star over here. We got Drake that's attached with it. All of a sudden, now, you know, before when people just wanted to come over here, we'd be like, oh man, this is the White Vegas. Let me come over to Toronto, you know, for a little visit. Now he's like, oh, you know what? People are really starting to feel it, like for an all-around destination type thing.
Yeah, the city's hot right now.
Do you think with Drake still attached to the team that has any kind of significance anymore?
Not necessarily. I mean, did Jay-Z have an influence on the Nets? No, let's be honest. I mean, it does and it doesn't. It adds an element of like that. You know, at the end of the day, everyone wants to be attached to the it, right? The six, that's what they call it now, is the it. But if the six wasn't winning, nobody would be even entertaining coming. The only reason why people are somewhat like, I'm going to take that chance, is because of the winning.
Well,
that's it. Yeah. Winning. Look here. No one. Has anyone been to OKC before?
Nope. Exactly. But
I've been to Oklahoma, and I ain't going back. Right? has anyone even been to San Antonio before?
I have.
Actually, I have.
Yeah. So both of y'all know, right?
Yeah.
San Antonio is basically a military type town. No offense to anyone from San Antonio out there, but come on, you can't. It's like what's his name? We used to play. He plays for the Knicks now. He went to Chicago and goes Cleveland. What's in Cleveland? Right.
Oh, Noah. Yeah.
Noah. You know what I mean? What's in Cleveland? So none of these cities got what Toronto got. They don't got the it. But all these destinations that I mentioned are winning organizations. So Toronto right now was kind of evolving from that so-so team to a legit. Like, hey, they're good. Because the last couple of years, even remember I told you I was talking to Stacey King on NBA radio, and me and him going back and forth, and I call in, and he was like, oh, here we go again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because my own argument was, look, Stacey, man, you can't base the Raptors on just one season. Like, this team is winning now, right? They got a rep now. Like, I'm talking about last year. Now everyone knows the Raptors. But I said, these guys are they're a legit team. Right, give them respect. Respect is due. Don't just say, "Oh, you know, at the beginning of the season, oh, they're going to come. You know, they're not even going to make the playoffs. They went to the conference finals. Right now, everybody's saying they're going to conference finals. But I still think, and this is coming from talking to like guys in the league, Toronto's still seen as a team that's like, meh, they're good, but meh. You know, no one's scared of playing Toronto. That's the problem.
I agree.
Right? Yeah. It's like Brooklyn tonight, right? Brooklyn came and played Toronto to the fourth quarter. Like, how can Brooklyn, one of the last place teams in the league, play a team that's supposed to be one of the top echelon teams the wire?
But give Brooklyn credit. They play hard this whole season. They're not good, but they play hard against everybody this season. They even pushed Cleveland a few weeks ago to the limit as well. Like, they actually just play hard, so I don't want to...
They play hard, but Calvin, when you see teams play against San Antonio, especially, I mean, it's an anomaly, but played against Golden State, right? Everybody walks into Golden State with their head down like, damn, here we go, right? Just like my son's team. When my son's team plays, you know, they got this team out here called Toronto Basketball Elite. Like my son's team, the game didn't even start and they're all like, okay, we lost. Why are we playing? Because no one can play with them, right? Mm. And I'm saying, like, the attitude, and that's what I tell my boys, is the attitude, you have to have that attitude, that swagger, like, you have to portray that you're better than you are, even if you're good. Because teams got to come in here fearing you. Nobody fears the Raptors. So if other teams don't fear the Raptors, why would players really want to jump ship and come? That's just what I'm saying. Unless it's someone smart and goes, you know what, man, I know I can be that guy to be the extra piece to bring him a chip, and I want my statue in, you know, Raptor Square or whatever, Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That's what I'm saying, like, before, that we basically got to continue to stack success on top of each other and just, you know, continue winning. I mean, that's where everything changes. Winning is like the great deodorant, man. It masks everything. You know what I mean? So it even masks perceptions, right? So, and as far as the Drake thing, before we go, as far as the Drake thing is concerned, I mean, Hadley, you know, we spoke about this from the day that he even took on that role as global ambassador. He's allowed to play in the gray area, you know, where a lot of teams and people can't. You know what I mean? Because with Drake, I mean, if Drake calls Kevin Durant, that's a legitimate friend. He's not really poaching to go for the rap, you know, to come to Toronto, but, you know, he can make a phone call here and there. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, he can't look at it as, well, you know, he's tampering, because, I mean, he's a rapper. He's in the same circles with a lot of these guys anyway, you know? So I'm not saying it's an incredible asset, but the shit don't hurt. You know what I mean? And I think Toronto was at the point too, and they still are. They're at the point where it's like, you use every advantage that you can get, you know, to change the perception. So, like, for me, I'm like, I'm for it. I like that you have somebody that can play in the gray area. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool thing, because, like I said, again, that's like I said, you gotta basically turn every stone and just flip every coin. You just gotta see. You just gotta see what you can use, and if you have an advantage for it, you gotta use it.
Yeah,
we've always talked about, like, Calvin, I think you're the one that told me this. The Raptors has had, like, the strongest schedule to date in all of the NBA, and they're still sitting in
second place, yeah,
Cleveland in the number two spot. So if that's the case, and the schedule's only going to get easier than going forward, and then you get guys like Sully back, and Patrick Peterson has been gone for the majority of the first half as well too. They're on their way for another 55 plus win season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our thing is not the regular season. It's the playoffs.
That's where
the season really begins now, because we're at a point where, at the very worst, when we look at the Raptors, where before we're like, you know, we're just trying to see if we get in the playoffs. We're legitimate first round home court advantage. We're just playing for positioning now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, what position we're gonna get. So it's like, it's really about how, you know, we talk about masking deficiencies and deodorant and all that stuff. To me, it's like the regular season is really just a dress rehearsal. It's the second season, the playoffs. All of a sudden, that deodorant, that 12 hour deodorant, is now, we're going on a 13 hour. And all that stuff is starting now.
Yo, Hadley, you know, we talk about the minus one, right? The minus one girl in the club. It's the girl. So I'm gonna go even further. So I bring her home, and I'm like, yo, she's dying. And all of a sudden, I wake up in the morning, she takes off the lashes, she takes off the extensions, and you're like, yo, I got a woogie monster in my bed, right? So really, realistically, right, through the regular season, they're minus one. But in the playoff time, they're minus nine.
So what are you trying to say? She's like Tisha Martin in the Will Smith episode, where she's taking off her nails and her wig? here.
So what are you know? Realistically, like, we're talking all this, you know, and I think Masai has a plan. I've heard different directions, and that's probably another conversation. But, you know, I just don't see it happen. I mean, we all talked about it. My personal opinion: the window where they should have really been aggressive was this past offseason. I kept saying it. They had great draft picks, and I mean, listen, I love what they did with the draft picks. I think it was good, but was it Podol and Pascal, and, yeah. You know, like, they're great, great guys, great additions, but we could have got something better with that high draft pick. You know, especially with the, I just think we could have done something really good with him and you know, package it with Patterson and Ross. You could have got something that would have helped us fight for that, at least get to play Golden State, right? And that's all we want, right? Once you get to that final, God knows what can happen, right? And maybe Masai can make a couple extra moves to little ones just to keep us competitive against them. I think that big giant, I think he can get chopped down. I see deficiencies within that massive work. Like I gave it to Golden State. They were able to get Durant. But I still see deficiencies in them.
Well, of course. I mean, they're definitely not as good defensively as they were a year ago.
No.
And then, you know, now it's legitimate. Like, who's taking the last shot, as we saw with Draymond Green spazzing out on KD when he decided to go ISO a few days ago, or on how long ago that was. It's funny as hell to watch. But obviously, we say they got deficiencies, but at the end of the day, what they got, like four or five losses? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're still the clear-cut favorite. And I say that with Cleveland, to me, playing better than they did last year when they won it all. I mean, seeing how Kevin Love is finally playing back at his all-star level caliber when he was with Minnesota. Kyrie legitimately is an MVP candidate, even though LeBron's on his team. Those guys are playing well. And then now the supporting cast of jump shooting around that they have with Korver, and Shannon Frye was all but dead before he came to Cleveland.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny, at the same time, they're playing better. I mean, I think Golden State, at the end of the day, in a seven-game series, it's hard for me to see anyone beating them. Mind you, that was my thought last year, and then the improbable was done with Cleveland.
Yeah.
But one thing, Randall, you touched on one potential move that Toronto can do was getting Noel, which, you know, I thought hopefully that we already did that in the offseason by using that pick or whatever the case may be. What, like, I don't know what the hell Philly is doing, because they've been waiting so long to pull the trigger for both. And you know me, I already have my conspiracy theory that I don't think Simmons is coming back this year. I think Philly, knowing how deep the draft is in 2017, is playing that they want to win, not want to win. They're playing keep away in the sense that they potentially can have two top 10 picks. Mm-hmm. And with those two top 10 picks, they can basically draft their backcourt for the next decade. So I don't know how much they want to mess with that immediate future by bringing in Simmons and potentially getting some more Ws. But do you think the reason why they hold on to Noel and Okafor for so long is just for that, because they want to keep on losing? Because I'm like, every day that they keep these guys on the roster, their trade value is just diminishing. So I'm hoping it diminishes to a point that we can get Noel for, I don't know what it will take at this point. I don't know what they're looking for.
I don't think they're going to trade Noel at this point. I think they're going to let him walk, because they're not going to get anything really for him. What are you going to get for him at this point, right?
Yeah.
He's a free agent in the summer. I don't see him re-signing him. So, you know, I don't think they want to get duped, nor do I think they want to, you know, contribute to any more teams winning more than they have to, right?
Plus, never forget as well, I mean, I wouldn't say he's injury prone, but I mean, he is kind of injury prone. You know, he's had two knee surgeries already, and he's still in his early 20s.
I mean, he'll find a landing spot in the offseason, trust me. And the team's going to pay him.
Yeah.
But back to Simmons, though, really interesting, and that's a little off topic. But Simmons, I think they're going to keep him and convert him to a three. I think you're right to go after the backcourt. But I think they're going to keep him. I think they can convert him.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely keeping Simmons. I'm just saying that Simmons, he's not coming. And Calvin can attest to this. I think even put on the S10 chat. As soon as Simmons went down with the injury, I said it. I was like, he ain't playing this year. They're gonna sit him out. And it's funny, because it's funny you say about converting to a three. Me and Calvin were saying from last year, I was like, yo, this guy, he's not a four. He's a three.
Yep.
The only reason they're talking about him as a four is because he's 6'10". He's a three. He embodies a three. And I think, especially now with how Embiid is taking over that five. Yeah, I think they got Saric and they still have Ilyasova. I think they can probably still use those guys as a four. I wouldn't put it past Philly with trying to convert him to a three, because I definitely think he can play that point forward type role. I don't think Simmons, they're definitely going to keep Simmons. I just don't think he's coming back this year. I think they're going to play, because I already saw saying like, oh, he was supposed to come back in January. There's no exact date. I'm telling you, we're going to see in the near future how Simmons had a quote-unquote setback in air quotes, and we're not going to see this guy this year.
Yeah.
The only other trade I can see the Raps doing just on is with Denver. It's the only other team I can kind of potentially see something being done. But, I mean, again, why does Denver need to make a trade with us?
Yeah, exactly. They don't get pushed to another level. And on top of that, too, with Gallinari being a free agent this year as well himself, that's somebody else that's rumored that Masai has his eye on, too. Even though he's injury prone, but, you know, I love Gallinari, but he's injury prone as well. But that's another person, too, that Masai is actually kind of eyeing. But to wrap up, that's from what I hear as rumors as well. But to wrap up, basically the verdict is the Raptors should just stand pat, right?
Yeah. I mean, they stand pat unless Masai we trust, right?
Yeah.
But even if they make a move, Calvin, even if whatever move they make, unless it's something big, which I think we all agree is virtually impossible at this point, what's the point? What are you going to get that's going to be worth it?
And it's tough, too, because with the cap going up, any free agent, even somebody like a Blake, because, you know, it's rumored that you know, the owner, Steve Ballmer, like he said he's already went on record to say that he's going to do anything he can to keep Blake and CP3. Now, and I mean, he'll sign them both to max contracts. He doesn't care, you know, because I think you're, you know, obviously you're allowed to go over the cap to sign your free agents, like your max free agents anyway. But with that said, like, are you going to leave $200 million on the table to sign somewhere else for like $130? $75 million is a lot of money, bro. You know, that's the thing as well. So this new era of new money that the NBA is, like, you know, like basically making it rain off of, you're really putting pressure on free agents to leave the place that they've, you know, that they've been calling home for many years, because, like, especially if you're a max player, because you're just leaving too much money on the table now. Before, like, you left money on the table, but with certain things, especially depending on the on the state that you went to, if it had no state tax or certain things, you can get away with it. But now it's like it's just too much money, man. It's just too much money to leave, you know. But on that note, fellas, you know, thank you for coming onto the app today.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Hold up, man. Anytime.
Yeah, and Rand, definitely, you know, for sure, we gotta have you back. You know, first time guest. I set the table for you. You know, next time you can come and, you know, pour your own juice like Headley does now. At this point.
Hashtag club etiquette.
Hey, oh, you know I'm gonna finish this story when I wrap club up the podcast by myself. You know I'm gonna edit that story up.
Hashtag club etiquette. Hashtag minus one.
All right, fellas.
All right.
Thank you once again for tuning in to the AV podcast. And once again, shout out to Headley and Randall Walter for coming in on the AV today and having that Raptors conversation. It's always a topic for discussion in Toronto, for sure. Now, I couldn't leave this podcast without telling my side of the club etiquette story, right? You know there's always three sides to a story. There's a truth, there's your version, and there's mine. The cool thing about my story is that it also doubles as a truth. So I'm more than willing to share that with you right now. All right, so let me take you to back in the day. Back in my university days when I was young and single. My peoples and I went to a big party during Caravana weekend. I can't remember the name of the club, but it was a club on Adelaide Street, I believe. You know, back in the day when there used to be a club district, you know, before the city decided to turn every square inch of available space into a skyscraping condo. But anyways, the party was live, it was sick, the music was great, the party was packed, and there was eye candy everywhere. So while the party's in full swing, the party's going down, Headley taps me on the shoulder and says, yo, let's go for a walk, man. Let's go take a tour. Basically meaning, let's go meet some women, you know, to go dance with, get some numbers, the whole, you know, the whole thing. So I take the lead and we're walking through the crowd. And at the same time that the music stops and the MC jumps on the mic, giving the DJs a chance to rotate, I see two women. Now, Headley's right behind me. And keep in mind, it's a tight space because the club is packed. And as I was about to stop to talk to the first woman, I saw a friend right beside her. Hey, yo, let me tell you. Whew, she was ridiculous. Ridiculous. So instead of stopping, I slide to the right like James Brown, and I stop right behind her. So, you know, she looks at me, you know, gives me the once over, and she smiles. So, you know, basically I got verified. I was good to go. I went through the whole security check. I was good. Now, two things. Number one, there was no way Headley would be able to get around me to get to her without me walking past her so we can get to talk to her. And then me having to fight through, you know, the two of them just to get back to her friend. So that's one. I don't think he even saw the girl first, being that he was right behind me. He only really saw her when I stood right behind her and he took a good look at her. And the reason why I say that, the reason why I believe this is... And I'm going to say what he said to me verbatim, and I'm not lying here. This is what he says to me next. So, you know, when he saddles up behind her friend now, and the music was about to start back up, you know, and I'm getting ready to, you know, to receive my blessings, right? He looks at this girl one more time. The guy taps me on the shoulder, leans forward to me, and no lie, he says with a straight face, do you want to switch? Man, I stared right back at this dude for a moment. You know, I looked at him dead in his eye and I said, hell no. Yo, and then this dude had the audacity to give me a dirty look. And you know what? Honestly, none of it even mattered because, yo, this girl gave me, as us Trinis like to say, the wuck. Yo, that was an A1 performance. And her friend... Let's just say Headley didn't get the same kind of dance from her. So after about a minute or two, Headley taps me on the shoulder and says, yo, let's keep walking. Meanwhile, this girl's making me feel like a rapper in my own video. The way she's dancing up on me, twerking on me, everything. I swear she invented the twerk that night. Like I said, yo, it was an A1 performance. So I look back at him with a smile on my face and I say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna chill here for a little while. If this dude gave me one of the dirtiest looks I've ever received in my life. Honestly, if looks could kill, Randall would be the one doing the eulogy at my funeral. Talking about, yo, he was a good dude, yo. That's my day one. It's my day one. Team Darkskin. Team Darkskin lost a soldier today. So that's the story. I did not violate club etiquette because I didn't make a decision on the first woman. Listen, I paused for a split second and I made my final decision immediately afterwards. I didn't do any underhanded tactics, and I always believe he didn't even see that girl until I stood behind her. Why else would he ask me to switch? I mean, come on, man. Matter of fact, I charge you with trying to block my happiness on the dance floor. Mutombo, you try to Dikembe Mutombo my blessings. Anyways, listeners, you be the judge. What do you think? Feel free to let me know. Hashtag club etiquette. As usual, thanks for tuning in as always. Later this week, we're going to have a two-part podcast on the 25th anniversary of Juice. From the soundtrack to the movie itself. So please stay tuned for that. And to make sure you peep that, as well as more podcasts and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Headley and for Randall Walter, this is Cal C. And this is the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, y'all. I'm out. I violated club etiquette. This guy must be mad.